Yo, c'est une menace, l'amour paradise, paradise. This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community here. My guest today is Eric Gray, and Eric is an acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist at our new new location, Watershed Wellness, here in Astoria. And we are going to be talking about acupuncture, Chinese medicine, Chinese herbs, and sort of a different paradigm of looking at health. So welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you.
And tell us, you and your wife are new to Astoria. Tell us how you landed here. Is it the beer?
No, I mean, the beer is great, of course. but we'd just been coming here for a long time, just for vacation. And Portland just got to be a little too much. And
yeah.
We're both small town kids. And so we knew we had to go back. And our daughter left the house. So we thought, hey.
Now is the time.
Now is the time. So Astoria seemed like the right place to
That's
go.
That's right. You
so.
Had your choice. Most parents are like, let's go to Disneyland or something.
Yeah, no.
The kids out of the house.
Yeah. No. It's been really great. And we've settled in finally. I think it's finally starting to feel normal, more or less.
And you go back and forth. You still have a practice in Portland.
Correct, yeah.
And so you do, you kind of mix your time here and there.
Yeah. In Portland, the clinic's a little bigger. Amanda still goes back and forth, so she's still doing massage there. So she does massage. And then here she teaches yoga. I'm here almost 100% now.
Uh-huh.
I go back to teach at NUNM, and I teach about once a month. So I have to go back once a month no matter what. So.
Gotcha.
just enough city time to keep me going.
Just enough time in traffic, and then you're ready to come back to the coast.
Exactly.
So tell us, I know your background is philosophy originally.
Yeah.
Tell us how you came to be interested in Chinese medicine and sort of how... Tell us your whole life story and how you ended there in Chinese medicine.
I was born. No.
Yeah.
So I started out in university. I got 2 degrees, one in biology and one in philosophy. And my focus was kind of environmental ethics. And then I started getting interested kind of in the philosophical issues in science and medicine, you know, things like placebo effect and things like research paradigms and how all that stuff works. And I went to start a PhD at Purdue in philosophy. And when I started, it just didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. I felt like I wanted to do something more concrete for people. I always wanted to help people, but I just didn't, I didn't know what to do. And so I actually left that program, came back to Oregon. To be fair, Indiana and I did not get along super well.
Yeah,
like the heat, and there was like bunnies instead of squirrels and fireflies, and it was too much. So I came back home, and
you divorced the state.
I divorced the state. Yeah. And I came back and just started looking around for what I was going to do next. It was one of those, dark nights of the soul kind of a thing.
Yes.
Like, what am I going to do with myself? And I saw, it was just a chance encounter. I saw a flyer for the program at NUNM, and I actually was admitted as a naturopath and was going to start that program, and then met Heiner Fruhoff, who would be my mentor. And he was like, naturopathic medicine is great. Why don't you do both? And I was like, I value and respect my adrenals is why. and so I just made the decision to go more towards Chinese medicine. It just, it balanced kind of the philosophical elements and the medical elements. And
yes.
So that's where it began.
Yes.
Then,
and I can tell you, having been a student at NUNM, which is the naturopathic and Chinese medicine school in Portland, that when I did not study Chinese medicine, but in my basic naturopathic medicine training, we had Chinese medicine classes.
Right.
And when you walked into your teacher, Heiner's class, it was like walking into this different world. Like here you were going from dissecting humans.
Yeah.
And then you walk in and it's like even the art on the walls. And then he starts talking. And you're right. It's this world of philosophy and energy. And it's just this incredible paradigm. And then I'd walk back out and be like, oh, no, I need to now go dissect a human.
Yeah, it's true. It's a very different feel there. And I really respect the people who manage both programs because they're amazing practitioners. They have so many tools at their disposal, but it was just not, I couldn't
do it all.
I'd already been in higher education for 10 years at that point. I was like, I'm done.
Yes, right. And so I think so. People, when they think of Chinese medicine, I think they think of acupuncture, obviously.
Yes.
Not everyone thinks of herbs, but that's also an integral part and an integral tool in the toolkit.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little, like, what's kind of the basic, how do you summarize what Chinese medicine is, how it differs? I know this could be like a 10-part radio show, but what's your elevator pitch sort of about what, you know, you have to kind of describe in a few paragraphs what the paradigm is and what the understanding is of the body through that lens?
You just wanted to start with the real easy questions?
Totally.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Or let's start with what's your astrological sign?
Oh, yeah. Really?
No.
There's a big terminology problem. So when we say Chinese medicine, I actually like to refer to East Asian medicine.
Uh-huh.
I prefer that.
Yeah.
Because in most schools in the United States, people learn mainland Chinese techniques. They also learn some Taiwanese techniques. There's Korean and Japanese. And these are, you know, the Korean and Japanese medicine has some folk and some indigenous aspects to it, but it's largely kind of a recasting of Chinese medicine. So when Chinese medicine was born in the kind of among the kind of Han people of China, it started to spread out into all of Southeast Asia. So I just think it's a better term.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's step one. Step two is that when we're talking about all of that overall, largely we're talking about the combination of herbs and acupuncture. So 90% of practitioners in this country learn both. That's not this in China. It's not that way, but here it is. So it encompasses an umbrella term, is what I'm trying to say. So when somebody says Chinese medicine or East Asian medicine, they're referring to all those modalities.
That makes sense.
But what binds them together is the kind of theoretical framework that underlies them, and that theoretical framework largely comes from ancient Chinese philosophy and science that was happening at that time, and then of course it's developed through thousands of years, and theoretical basis. So that's the five elements that people are so familiar with, the 12 organ systems, the six conformations. These concepts, they underlie both herbs and acupuncture. Mm-hmm. So it's a theoretical and a diagnostic framework.
Right.
Right. So when I sit down to work with a patient, if let's say they have fibromyalgia, which we were just talking about, I to be very honest, as a classical practitioner, which we can get into, I don't care, kind of. I don't care about the diagnosis that comes
Absolutely.
From biomedicine.
You not care about the person in front of you. You're treating the person and not the disease.
Exactly. I diagnose them as they are without that layer of information. Now, I do want to say that it is true that I will look at research, contemporary research, which sometimes will reference things like fibromyalgia because that's the paradigm. But that's not where I begin, because it's not useful, because there's no such – in the Han Dynasty texts, there's no reference to fibromyalgia.
Absolutely.
But there is reference to pain that exists all over the body and that happens with even light touch or exhaustion combined with chronic pain, right? So there are these symptom unifications. And so I utilize that theoretical construct underneath to then – diagnose and come up with a treatment. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I think really, you know, as you said, this is a very ancient medicine and our modern medicine is so young. It's so new. It's a baby.
It is.
And I think in our modern medicine, we need diagnoses because we match them with pharmaceuticals. That's just nothing wrong with it. Nothing. That just is the way it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I agree in the way that I practice as well, in anything that's kind of a more holistic, integrative, functional way of looking at the body, you really, you know, and I tell this to patients all the time, I'm not treating the lab numbers or I'm not treating the label, I'm treating you.
Right.
And you might look completely different than what the label or the lab numbers
say. I mean, that's one of the problems that a lot of folks who I see, because I see a lot of people, as we were talking about, that kind of have gone through several treatment courses on the biomedical side and then are kind of like, I'm not getting any help, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they come, you know, with a diagnosis, I think one of the first things that you have to do is get them to really just focus on what they're experiencing. I mean, like a perfect example is when I'll ask, and this is a funny thing to bring up when I'm first meeting this studio audience is when people talk about their urination, right? People don't know about their urination. Like nobody pays attention to this. But the reality is when I ask how is this, or thirst, that's another example. Mm-hmm. If I say, are you thirsty? They'll say, well, I try to drink a lot of water.
Right.
And it's like, that's not what I asked you.
Right.
What I asked you is, do you feel thirst? And so much of what we do is just reminding people that they have access to their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And what they feel and what they believe about their bodies matters, you know, and that I'm not just going to look at them as some abstraction of lab values. Mm-hmm. And not that I'm saying all medical doctors do that by
any
means, but the system is set up, especially the high intensity, fast paced world of contemporary medicine. You know, it can be hard because there is this thing of there's a diagnosis, and there's a treatment.
Yeah.
And
it's very algorithmic.
Yeah. And you really have to move quickly. And so mm-hmm. what the patient feels about their urination is kind of irrelevant.
Absolutely.
You know, from their perspective. And so it can be a real retraining of really just reminding patients that how their bodies feel is important, and the diagnosis maybe is less so on some level.
And I think also what you're saying, when patients, when they get in tune with what's happening with them, they will tell you exactly what's wrong.
Absolutely.
But there's just been such a disconnect where we kind of, you know, we as patients go to the doctor expecting the doctor to tell us
what's happening. Exactly.
But really, ideally, for true healing to happen, it has to flip, where the patient actually is in touch with what's happening.
Yeah.
And they tell their practitioner or their physician what's happening. And then you just guide them towards the things to bring them back into balance using that info.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard for patients to get in touch with that.
It is. It's a real challenge. And it's a process. You know, it does take time to remember. I mean, it takes time for all of us to remember, like, oh, yeah, like what I feel matters. And, you know, or people who say, like, well, I'm in pain, but it's not as much as this other person's
pain. That's
right.
It's
like, well, okay.
But still, your experience is pain.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And when we talk about, we've talked about kind of acupuncture and Chinese medicine being sort of we think of that as, you know, that's what comes to mind, but that's actually just the treatment piece. The world of diagnosis is a whole nother art.
Yes, it is.
And talk a little bit about the way that Chinese medicine or East Asian medicine looks at diagnosing and figuring out what's going on and where the imbalance is and the organ systems and
sure.
all of that.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, so like most medical systems, certainly like naturopathic medicine, there's kind of a diversity of diagnostic techniques. But chiefly we look to pulse, at least my tradition does. So Chinese medicine is still, East Asian medicine is still largely lineage-based, which means that, you know, you learn from a teacher, back on into prehistory.
Mm-hmm.
And so you largely learn the diagnostic techniques that your teacher learned. And so my teacher is very, very pulse-oriented. So it's a pulse system that's beyond rate and rhythm. We feel three levels and all the organ systems just through the pulse at the wrist. And then we look at the tongue. Sometimes I do less tongue diagnosis. There's a very advanced system of tongue diagnosis. We'll feel the body. You know, we do palpation. How, you know, whether a person's lower leg is puffy in a certain way can tell me something about what's going on with their spleen, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is palpatory stuff, abdominal palpation, those types of things. And then there's other diagnostic techniques that I'm not skilled with, which are things like looking at the facial color, different things with the eyes. You know, there's all kinds of diagnostics. You know, and there are some East Asian medicine practitioners, usually because they have a prior degree, they're in nursing or something like that, they'll actually bring in some of the more, you know, contemporary diagnostic techniques. And so we'll take all that information in. And then, of course, talking to the patient. So we call it asking. So asking is like a major pillar of diagnosis. And so, you know, and not just what they say, but how they say it.
Mm-hmm.
And not just what they actually say, but the things they omit or the things that they avoid talking about. And so all of that stuff, you know, it's just like filters into the mind.
Yeah.
And then we use these theoretical constructs to say, okay, so what's going on? Like, you know, we talked about the five elements. So which one of the phase elements is not working right now? You know, sometimes we talk about the organ systems like a family.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in a family, especially when we're talking about Chinese families and the kind of Confucian structures that exist in China, you know, everybody's got a role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brother does this, sister does that, father does this, and so on. And so if we conceive of the organ systems that way, when somebody acts out of turn, right, when father decides, he's not going to do father, father's going to do brother.
Like the trash never gets taken out.
The trash never gets taken out, and dad's watching video games or playing video games, right?
Right.
That happens in the body where one organ system's like, you know what? I'm kind of done with this whole functioning thing. So I'm just going to hang out. And so we actually diagnose like what's going on with the imbalance of the family and try to restore that balance by either, you know, boosting somebody or reducing somebody's over exuberance or whatever it is. So mm-hmm. that's kind of the basic.
And the goal being getting everything back into balance so yeah. that the roles are harmonious again.
Yeah, so that everybody's doing their job. Now, it is true sometimes that there's an illness so great that somebody just gets taken out entirely, yeah. right? And I'm not talking about organs being removed, but, you know, for instance, fatty liver disorder mm-hmm. or something like that, where the liver is just not processing.
It's not able to function, you know? Yeah.
So in that case, we will feel that in the pulse, you know, and so sometimes we do have to kind of, you know, maybe dad's not in the house anymore. And so we need to boost up brother and sister and mother so that everybody
and redefine
can kind
the
of
roles.
Take, yeah, take on the, I'm stretching this metaphor to an extreme.
Sure.
But you know, it's just the point being that there's this idea of a harmonious function. And when we find a disharmony, we try to restore it. It's so simple. It sounds so simple. It's a lot more complicated than that really, but
yeah, no.
But it really does get down to that.
And the goal, I mean, I think no matter what medicine we're using, whatever paradigm, the goal should always be to restore normal physiology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not can we find a drug that through that a symptom is masked that we can take over
exactly.
over the long haul, but really can we just restore the normal functioning of the body?
Yeah, which is a completely different paradigm.
And harder. It's
it
harder.
Is, and longer.
And longer. Exactly.
Yeah, that is one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, we talk in East Asian medicine about the difference between the root and the branch. And the root is like the cause of the disease, you know, getting down to the base of it and curing it from its base so that it doesn't come back, so that the relief from suffering is long lasting.
That's right.
But sometimes you have to treat the branch, which are all the symptoms, because if a patient comes in and they have 10 of 10 back pain, I'm going to be working on their back pain.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to be making it so that they can walk out in at least 5 of 10 or 3 of 10 or maybe even 1 of 10, you know, and we'll work on the root later.
Absolutely.
You know, because sometimes symptoms are so severe that you can't be doing this long meandering work. But it takes a long time to restore. I always tell my patients, you know, I'll have a 50-year-old woman coming in with, you know, hot flashes, digestive disorder, whatever. They've got
yeah.
a variety of symptoms they've acquired
yeah.
over their long and exciting life. And they want to get better in a month.
Right.
And that's just not how it works.
Sure.
You know, the reality is you've taken 50 years to get into
exactly.
this thing.
Exactly. Right.
It's going to take us a while to get you out. And so I think a skilled practitioner of any medicine does a good job of balancing short-term symptom relief with long-term actually working
and treating
on the problem.
The cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually eradicating the problem.
We're talking with Eric Gray about Chinese medicine, acupuncture, herbs, and all the excitement that goes with it. I'm Dr. Allie Evans, and this is Light on Health. Yes, you're listening to Light on Health on Coast Community Radio, and I'm talking with Eric Gray, a local, we're very lucky to have, acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist at Watershed Wellness. So talk a little bit about maybe you can give an example. So we're talking about sort of how we diagnose and how we look at what's going wrong and when organ systems kind of go awry. I think sometimes people think about organs as strictly the organ, right? The
sure.
heart pumps blood, the lungs
right.
give oxygen. Talk a little bit about the other roles that classical Chinese medicine has looked at that these organs do.
Sure, yeah. So one of the things that most lay people always love to talk about is the organ systems, because it's a very different paradigm of looking at the organs. I think it helps people have a different relationship to their bodies that,
yeah.
that is enjoyable.
Yeah, because how many people wake up and think about their spleen?
Yeah, not very many.
That's right.
I would ask everybody listening, how many of you even know where the spleen is?
That's
I mean, the reality
right.
is I am not so sure myself sometimes. but you know, some of the organs obviously are less well-known than others. But so, you know, we use this concept of the 12 organ systems, and the organ systems themselves are more than the anatomical organ. They include the anatomical organ, but they also transcend it. And so it includes functions in the body. So, you know, metabolic functions might be related,
mm-hmm.
for instance, to the spleen and the stomach, right? But then also the channel. So, you know, the spleen channel, for instance, runs.
And that's what we see when we look at, like, if anyone's ever seen those charts of acupuncture meridians,
yeah.
You see, like, these lines drawn all over the body.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are the channel system. That's how we largely, hopefully none of my colleagues are listening, but largely that's how we determine what points we're going to, you know, people often ask, well, how do you decide where to put the needles? Well, they're on an actual course of a channel. If we're talking about the spleen includes the anatomical spleen, but it also includes spleen-like functions, mm-hmm. which have been determined over these thousands of years of mm-hmm. development, and then also the course of the channel. So, for instance, if somebody has pain on the medial leg, sometimes that might be spleen-related because the spleen channel runs through there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I say to a patient, you have spleen qi deficiency, for example, I'm not saying necessarily that something is deficient
wrong
in
with
the
their spleen.
Anatomical spleen.
Right.
And that's so, like, especially if you get into heart patterns, people start to panic a little bit mm-hmm. because nobody wants to think of something wrong with their heart, obviously. And it may be. Sometimes it is. There's a physical organ mm-hmm. issue going on. But more often, in the case of the heart, it's usually a mental, emotional pattern of mm-hmm. some kind, right? So it includes not just physical functions, but also mental, emotional functions, also spiritual functions, and diverse areas of the body. And all of these things, in a way, we divide all structures and functions of the body on all levels into 12 portions.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some way, every organ system has a piece, you know, so theoretically we could go through every single function and structure in the body and name them spleen, lung, heart, kidney, whatever.
That's right.
So they're a little bit bigger than that, you know, and there's a lot of personality and interesting information out there about the organ systems because, and this is getting a little bit heady, but many of you have probably seen the organ clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just imagine a clock with 12 sections, and each organ system goes on one section. So way at the top, up at 12, is the heart. And all the way down at the bottom is the gallbladder. And then all the rest of them are...
Fill in the blank, yeah.
And so because it's 12, Chinese culture, especially traditional Chinese culture, is very fond of numbers and very fond of enumerating things, right? So there's 12 of a lot of things in Chinese culture, including 12 zodiac signs.
Mm-hmm.
And so each organ system can be associated with the other 12s, mm-hmm. in a sense, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance... Let's just do the heart. The heart is associated with the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to talk to patients about this because think of a horse, right? One of the things about horses is that they're very sensitive to,
mm-hmm.
to human. Mm-hmm. And some people who are really connected to horses, there's almost like a spiritual or an energetic connection, you know, and that's different than, say, a snake, right?
That's
snake
right.
is the animal of the spleen, right? So, and then also the incredible stamina of a horse, the power of a horse, that's all about the heart. I mean, think about the heart. It's beating every moment you're alive.
I know. When you said that, I thought of like a trotting horse with the rhythm.
Exactly.
You know, like a galloping.
Exactly.
It's such a rhythmic.
Yeah. Yeah. It
mm-hmm.
absolutely is. And so all of those things play. They give layers of information to us about the organ systems. And that's where I feel like it's really helpful to teach patients about that because all of a sudden you have this connection to your heart that's different,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it leverages different parts of human consciousness.
That's
that,
right.
That can in themselves be helpful for healing.
And it's pretty fascinating to think. You know, when you have someone on the table and when you go into that treatment phase of actually, you know, giving them acupuncture needles and coming up with a kind of an herbal plan for them, all of this assessment has gone into it where when you put a needle in, it's not just I'm treating your knee, here's a needle.
Right.
It's really this whole very integrative, holistic assessment of this entire person.
Right.
And what's where the imbalance is.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think of an average person who comes to see us, you know, it's usually not that they just have one thing.
No,
I mean,
right.
I do have patients come in and they just sprain their knee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit more straightforward style
sure.
of treatment. And so I do want to say that, you know, it's not like every single patient that walks in, every single visit, I'm going into this like intense trance and like understanding their entire
right.
physiology.
Yes,
and like,
of
you know,
course.
I just don't have time for that.
Of course.
But when I see a patient for the first time, especially, or if they have a very, you know, complex health history, then we do have to do, you know, a little bit more in-depth diagnosis. And the most important thing to understand is that let's say you come in with 10 different health problems. It doesn't mean I'm going to do like a certain number of needles for each health problem.
Absolutely.
In fact, the whole nature of holistic medicine is that, you know, the best practitioners can do one or two needles, no
mm-hmm.
matter how complex the patient, and affect a change.
Well, and it's probably what you were talking about treating a root versus a branch.
Absolutely.
You know, all those 10 10 things they're coming in with are all these branches stemming from the same root cause.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 And that's, you know, one thing that people find interesting, I think, like we were talking about, is that, you know, somebody for the liver organ system, let's say somebody can come in and they can have extreme irritability and headaches. And both of those things are united through the liver. And so I might just have to treat one channel, even though there's two things that people are like, how is that related?
You know?
Or like gut problems and skin problems, which is a little bit easier to understand biomedically. But you know, I think that's one of the powers of this, is that it simplifies what can be a very complex health history so that you can grasp it, you know, as a practitioner.
That's right.
That's helpful for patients.
I have to say, when I was, for a while, I had very regular acupuncture treatments, and my acupuncturist would treat, you know, she'd be treating the heart meridian or something, and I'd go home and I'd have dreams of ex-boyfriends for like a straight week after it. And then she'd treat the kidneys, and I'd have these water dreams of tsunamis. And I was like, gosh, whatever she's doing really is working.
Yeah. There is that whole, you know, I mean, there's so much about the human mind that we don't understand, and so much about the body that we don't understand.
Right.
And so it's not so hard to believe that there would be these diverse effects, unusual effects on dreams and consciousness.
Sure.
Yeah, a lot of people find that, you know, that, and I'll have patients come in who didn't tell me about pathologies they had.
Right.
And I just did the root treatment, and these things resolved they didn't even tell me about. And when they say what resolved, it's all connected to that organ system we
treated.
Right. And so that's always really interesting.
So I have to go here.
Do it.
So people are afraid of needles. And lots of my patients that I'll have will be like, no. Tell us your little I'm asking for the reveal here.
Yeah. Okay.
Your little secret.
Okay. So, well, we'll start with the secret. But so I'm intensely needle phobic, like pretty high anxiety about needles. Like I was saying, it's been about 18 months since my last blood draw, and my naturopath is like now taken to calling me and
reminder
being like,
calls.
Are you gonna? Because I hate it, I really hate it, and even to acupuncture, I'm a little sensitive, and I'm still managed to be an acupuncturist. So
there's
a lot of things to say about it. One is that the needles are so small that it's ridiculous. I mean, there's, you know, average 30 to 50 acupuncture needles can fit into a blood draw needle. So,
and almost everyone has had a blood draw. And if you can picture that, I mean, you're talking about a 30th or a 40th of the diameter.
They're human hair width, you know, and they are so sharp that, you know, just like hypodermic, that it always hurts a little less than you expect usually because it's so sharp that it gets right through the skin. Plus, acupuncture points largely are placed in areas away from nerve tissue and vessels. You know, hitting a blood vessel, there's a lot of nervous system action that goes on when that happens that can communicate pain. And so there's a lot that we do, you know, to minimize pain. There's also, I am a very gentle needler because I'm afraid of needles.
Right.
And so I learned to needle by practicing on my daughter, who's a tiny little thing and was very, very reactive at the time. And so I had to learn to be very, very gentle. And so there's gentler and more severe techniques. You know, just like any healthcare practitioner, there are people who, you know, have more and less aggressive methods. And sometimes, honestly, those more aggressive methods work better for some patients.
Sure.
You know, I have patients I won't even say it out loud, but like I can needle in a way that's too much for me.
Yeah.
and they don't feel it at all. So, you know, so there's just, I mean, I wish I could just needle everyone once so they could see.
So they could see.
Not,
I know.
It's really not that terrifying. And I do a lot to set people at ease.
To mitigate their anxiety.
We can do
anxiety,
one needle. And there's cupping, there's body work things that we can do, there's acupressure we can do, and there's, of course, the herbs. So even if somebody's completely needle phobic, they cannot hang with it.
Right.
There's lots we can do. So.
And in your practice, you're seeing, is it full spectrum people? I mean, I know you can treat someone who's pregnant to try to, you know, get labor going.
Sure.
Do you treat the full spectrum kind of from life to death, from birth to death?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I haven't done a lot of work on kids younger than 6 months,
sure.
As late into age as one can get, I've treated. You know, largely it's people between the ages of 30 and 50, but I can absolutely, you know, I do pediatric practice and I really like working with kids. And kids respond amazingly well because they don't have so much up here stopping them from experiencing.
That's right.
So, yeah. So,
and something to point out, which you and I have talked about, is, you know, we definitely have. There's sort of this cultural view of acupuncture sometimes as a luxury, you know, or massage even for that matter
absolutely.
Is a luxury.
Yeah.
acupuncture really, or, you know, Chinese medicine, I won't just say acupuncture, is really a very intense and effective medicine that is used, like you said, with people who are very ill. Yeah. You know, it's not just, oh, I feel like I should go to my acupuncturist or my knee kind of hurts or something like that. This is really,
I mean, we do the full, I especially really do the full spectrum. Like, you can do just relaxation treatment and treatment that's preventative also, which can feel like relaxation treatment.
Right.
And that's great. I love doing that with folks. But I do a lot of that in Portland. There's a lot more of that because people already have lots of healthcare stuff that they're doing. And, and so they don't, you know, need as much of the heavy stuff. But yeah, I mean, I, you know, I, like I was saying, you know, I treat stage four cancer kind of on the regular.
Sure.
You know, Lyme disease, you know, all kinds of infectious disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, serious, you know, people dying and people in all kinds of situations. So it's, you know, I mean, this is the medicine that was the predominant form of medicine in China, one of the most populous countries in the world. It, you know, continuously practiced, continuously researched, continuously developed for thousands of years.
That's
So it's medicine that literally had to save people's lives because that's all they had.
That's right.
You know, so it's important.
So for everyone who now can't wait to come in and see you and get on the acupuncture table, how do they contact you?
So we have a website, and that's at watershedwellnessastoria.com or watershedwellnesspdx.com.
Watershedwellnessastoria.com.
That's right.
Okay.
And there, all of our contact information is there, and we also do online scheduling, but we can do it also by phone. And I'm also, we're on Facebook and all those kinds
Sounds
of things.
Great.
We have a lot of patients connecting with us via Facebook.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're out of time. Thank you to my guest, Eric Gray. Very special thank you to Joanne Rideout, who is engineering our show.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Light on Health. Join me next month for another enlightening topic. And it's my hope that you have a great week and take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health.
Yes, sir.